From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, state lawmakers insist they'll forge ahead as a federal investigation to Governor Cuomo's former aides threatens to consume the rest of session. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the U.S. Attorney's probe, and the U.S. EPA meets with stakeholders as it kicks off its second five-year review of GE's Hudson River PCB cleanup. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Every day for the past 2 weeks, news reports have focused on a federal probe of Governor Cuomo's administration, and comes as both former leaders of the legislature are being sentenced to prison for corruption. Despite that, Cuomo and legislative leaders say they're trying to achieve some agenda items in the closing weeks of the legislative session. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo, whose former top aide and an associate are under federal investigation for potential fraud, made a rare public appearance. He was not at the state's capital, though, but in a remote area of the Adirondacks, announcing progress on a state land purchase. Cuomo says he plans to accomplish a lot with the legislature before the Senate and Assembly adjourn in mid-June. The governor says he wants to work on fighting heroin addiction, and he set up a task force which includes several of his agency heads and addiction specialists and treatment centers.
This state has a crisis with heroin and opiates. It is a statewide crisis. The number of young people, middle-aged people also, by the way, who we're literally losing, who are dying, is frightening. And it's all across the state. And I think the state needs to respond with a comprehensive package.
Cuomo says he wants to work on improving the state's housing policy to better aid the homeless. He also wants to improve access to breast cancer screening after his longtime girlfriend, celebrity chef Sandra Lee, was treated for the disease last year. And in a time when every branch of state government is either under investigation or has been investigated for corruption, Cuomo says he still wants to pursue ethics reform. The governor says the legislature should at least address a stalled measure to cancel the pensions of lawmakers convicted of felonies. Both former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and former Senate Leader Dean Skelos will be keeping their pensions under the current rules, even though both of them have been convicted on multiple corruption charges. Cuomo says that's wrong.
I mean, you want to talk about adding insult to injury. A person commits a felony related to their office. They violate the public trust, and then the public is supposed to pay them a pension for the rest of their lives.
The governor once again talked of limiting outside income for legislators. That factored heavily in the corruption cases against the former leaders. Cuomo's own former top aide, Joe Percoco, is being investigated by the U.S. attorney for possibly improperly getting consulting fees from companies doing business with the state. Senate Republicans, though, have previously rejected limiting outside income. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, following a private leaders' meeting earlier in the week with Governor Cuomo, says the governor and legislative leaders worked out a game plan for the second half of the session. Speaker Hastie denies, though, that all of the scandals are hampering lawmakers from their work, but he concedes that the second half of the session will be unlikely to accomplish as much as the first half was. That included a new state budget with a minimum wage increase and partial paid family leave.
I don't know if ambitious is the right term. Will the second half be as rewarding to me as the first half with the great things and the great budget? I don't know.
Senate Leader John Flanagan is more positive about achieving agenda items in the final weeks of the session. He says he's still pushing to reform business regulations and bring down workers' comp costs. Flanagan marks 1 year in his post this week after replacing former Leader Skelos, who resigned after his indictment in May of 2015. Senator Flanagan says the legislature made progress last year, even amidst the resignations and corruption charges against the two majority party leaders, and he says they won't be deterred by this year's corruption scandals.
No, we were productive before when a lot of things were going on. We're going to be productive now.
Speaker Hastie tacitly admitted, though, that expectations of what might be achieved have been lowered.
Try to do the best we can before we all have to run for re-election.
All 213 lawmakers faced the voters for the first time since the corruption scandals erupted in November. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. As we just heard from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt, every day for the past 2 weeks, news reports have focused on a federal probe of Governor Cuomo's administration. And that comes as both former leaders of the legislature are being sentenced to prison for corruption. Legislative leaders, despite that, say they're trying to achieve something this session. But perhaps even more importantly this week, the governor took one more step to distance himself from the former aides being investigated. We're talking about Joe Prococo and Todd Howe.
Well, Joe Prococo is a problem for the governor since at his father's eulogy, he took valuable time to acknowledge Prococo and to say that this is a man who was the third brother in the Cuomo family and probably the best loved by Mario. Now he says, I didn't know what was going on. You know, maybe things were happening, but I didn't know that. And there are very few who believe that. His other associate, who everybody knew that he was close to, was Todd Howe. And Todd Howe is different from Prococo. There are many who think that Prococo's loyalty will preclude anything that draws the governor into this. I don't think that's the case with Howe, who has proven by some of his past actions that he can do some pretty, well, let's put it this way, interesting things that have cost him a good deal, including, you know, some things that have been illegal that he had to take a plea on. And Cuomo says he didn't know about any of that either. I knew nothing.
But as you and Jimmy Vielkind from Politico talked about this week, with the governor's style, it's somewhat skeptical that he wouldn't know something.
Listen, this guy is a master, Andrew Cuomo, of detail. We know that when somebody is bothersome to him, that he will take appropriate actions and he will know what's going on. I like to put myself at Cuomo's table, you know, in the middle of the night, sitting there thinking as he works the phones, which thing is happening next that he needs to be involved in. Look, we know a whole bunch of things about Cuomo. Number one, we know that basically he likes a Republican state Senate like his father did. He's a Democrat, but he likes a Republican state Senate. He says one thing and he does another. And that's sort of the Cuomo style. You say one thing and you do the other, or you do nothing. He's done almost nothing to help the Democrats win back the Senate, although it may happen even without him. And that's because it's a presidential year, and that's a real possibility. So I like to think of him, black coffee in front of him, you know, thinking, what's the next move?
Well, part of this investigation includes SUNY Poly, or SUNY Polytechnic.
Oh, boy.
The head of which is Elaine Calleros.
That's right.
And as our Dave Lucas points out, unusual deals or agreements, you also spoke with Jimmy Vielkind about this, that have come up as, quote, the university's being used as an engine for economic development.
Well, that's right. Economic development and political development. Look, Andrew Cuomo plays very badly in upstate New York. I don't know. It's still a holdover from the old Mario days. I don't know. But, you know, when he ran against Zephyr Teachout in a Democratic primary, she cleaned his clock upstate. And she had no money. And he'd been pushing people to give money to his campaign and amassed a fortune. But he still got a million votes fewer in the last campaign, in the last election, than he did in the first election. And that trajectory does not spell success for him. So he is a guy who is in some real trouble upstate. Along comes Elaine Calleros, who has been the darling of governors. Mario, Pataki, Andrew, Spitzer, they all like him because he has the answer. I'm going to bring money in through CHIPS and the rest of it, and therefore I am untouchable. And that's right. He has been untouchable up to now. But I'll tell you the one place you're not untouchable, and that's from a federal prosecutor who is looking into the way in which contracts were awarded and business was done. I'm not saying he did anything wrong. I'm just simply saying we know that he is in the magnifying glass of Preet Bharara. And that, of course, has got to motivate Calieros, who is the highest paid person in state service. That has got to motivate Calieros to do certain things like quit some of the oversight boards, which are determining how these contracts are let and who does what. So he's off of a lot of that. Once somebody starts to bail out, you say, uh-oh, something's going on.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, as we just spoke with our political observer about, federal forces have been peering over New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's shoulder, looking at the chief executive's dealings and contacts for any sign of possible conflicts of interest, as well as unusual deals or agreements. SUNY Polytechnic is also being investigated. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Word came late on April 29th on a recent Friday. U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara was looking into the Cuomo administration's Buffalo Billion Initiative, and the administration in turn was bringing on a former prosecutor to launch its own investigation. SUNY Polytechnic President Elaine Calieros reportedly is under scrutiny as investigators turn over stones looking for possible bid rigging involving Calieros' possible connections with a company picked out to put a dormitory up on the SUNY Poly campus, and College Board member Joseph Nicola, who happened to be CEO of the construction company. Last year's reports of subpoenas in the Buffalo Billion matter involved SUNY Poly and caught the attention of reporters, including Wall Street Journal scribe Rebecca O'Brien.
SUNY's contracting process and the players involved, and not just the contract specifically, but kind of on a bigger level, their role in redevelopment projects around the state, and which have been championed by Governor Cuomo, and at which, you know, Elaine Calieros is at the center.
State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, according to reports, had been investigating the projects since September as well, trying to determine whether the bidding process to build the dorms violates New York's antitrust laws. It is far too early to know what the outcome of the investigations might be. After looking into the Moreland Act Commission's sudden closure, Bharara concluded there was no evidence a crime had occurred. Still, the apparent new normal has federal prosecutors ferreting out and exposing high-level politicians. There have been many casualties of the calls for transparency in government, which former Assemblyman and Albany historian Jack McEnany linked back to the days of the post-Watergate era.
That we learn who contributors are, what kind of investments exist, where conflicts of interest might be there between a public individual and or their immediate family. And I think in requiring this reporting, we've given investigatory bodies and prosecutors the tools that they need. Sometimes it's just a hint of a place to look. In other cases, it provides credibility perhaps to a whistleblower's comment. But the tools are there because of the reporting. And then in this, the internet age, then you can go deeper and deeper and look for connections.
When information trickles down to the news media, it can be awkward for a public figure like Calieros. O'Brien emphasizes no one has accused the Cuomo ally of wrongdoing, and he hasn't been charged with anything.
I think everyone's sort of looking at him and paying attention to his role in the state's economic development, and specifically in the governor's economic development sort of mission. And I think, you know, it's also worth noting that, you know, he himself, obviously, he's a, like he said, he's a larger-than-life figure. The role of SUNY in all of this is of interest to me. I'm not sure what to make of it yet, but the fact that SUNY seems to be acting as a development arm of the state in a lot of ways, anytime you see that, it just seems really interesting to me, right? I mean, what is SUNY? I mean, they are just becoming this vehicle for private-public partnerships upstate, and lots of contracts are flying around, lots of money, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything's wrong, but it just means that they're going to be an interesting subject for investigation.
Albany Assemblyman John McDonald says lawmakers are just as interested as everyone else.
You know, this is always a challenge when government, whether it's federal or state, is trying to inspire business, is that it does take a unique path. It takes partnerships, but sometimes there's a lot of rules and regulations that the business community never likes, and not really sure where this is leading to. And we have a very open mind, and I'm hoping that nothing was done inappropriately. It's not helpful with the upstate economy. We need every single project to be successful. And SUNY Poly has been successful in many aspects, and I'd hate to see it fail.
A lawyer for SUNY Polytechnic told the Wall Street Journal that it was fully cooperating with investigators, stressing that no evidence of wrongdoing has been found. Requests for comment from the governor's office, SUNY Polytechnic, and the attorney general's office were not returned. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency met last week with stakeholders in Saratoga Springs as it kicks off its second five-year review of GE's Hudson River PCB cleanup. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
As part of its oversight into General Electric's cleanup of toxic PCBs from the 40-mile stretch of the Upper Hudson, EPA legally must conduct five-year reviews of the Superfund project in perpetuity. On Thursday, EPA presented an overview of its first five-year review completed in 2012 and what's planned for the second review at a meeting of the Hudson River PCB Site Community Advisory Group. The stakeholders at the table were representatives of local municipalities, environmental groups, boaters, fishermen, and economic development organizations. EPA project manager Gary Klawinski took comments from CAG members as review process was outlined.
What we're going to do is set up a review team, which some of these folks will be a part of. We'll take input and work closely with the community and all those involved to do this upcoming five-year review.
GE concluded dredging on the Upper Hudson last fall and will remain on the river for monitoring and habitat restoration work. EPA maintains that the river's ability to recover is essential. During Thursday's meeting, the stakeholders tossed out several questions, and not only on the review process. Retired Saratoga Town Judge and CAG member David Mathis asked if anything would be done to promote recreational boating on the Hudson. Mathis, an avid boater himself who lives on the river, said he's seen very few boats pass by this season.
Four boats, and one of those is a Corps of Engineers boat. So I've seen three recreational boats go north. There's other, you roll the clock back 15 years, there would be easily 10 times that.
Mathis suggested to a GE representative in the room that the company develop a campaign to bring people back to the river.
Economically, the issue is the public perceives the river is still being hazardous. It's not a safe place. And you just can't tell people that we've reduced the risk, the health risk for your children. So come on back. So we really need to do something to turn that around.
As part of the cleanup work, the 40-mile section of the river was divided into three segments, not equal in size. Dan Rochelle, a staff attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, claimed cleanup standards varied across the segments, meaning that a PCB hotspot in one area would perhaps not be considered a hotspot in another section. Rochelle said this method has left behind several toxic donuts in the river sediment.
A large number of them, where that most contaminated portion of the area was remediated, but there's a ring of contamination left around that area, sort of like a donut, like a big toxic donut.
The most contaminated section of the river stretches from Fort Edward to Troy, though NRDC is also concerned that there was no remediation done in the other 160 miles of the Hudson River Superfund site. Questions were also raised about fishing and navigational dredging in the Champlain Canal. One CAG member criticized EPA's oversight as weak. Klawinski said EPA will follow up on any unanswered questions and that he's not surprised at the reactions to such a large and complicated cleanup project.
I'm glad when people ask questions because then I can fill them in and make sure they understand, because the most challenging part is when people don't understand, and we want to make sure that they do.
The five-year review is scheduled to be completed by 2017.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The law firm that filed a class action lawsuit against two companies connected with water contamination in Hoosick Falls is now investigating a water contamination issue in Newburgh. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Law firm Weitz & Luxembourg filed the suit on behalf of residents regarding PFOA water contamination in the upstate New York village of Hoosick Falls in February. It now has its eyes on the city of Newburgh, where a sister chemical, PFOS, or perfluorooctane sulfonate, was found after testing in Silver Stream and Washington Lake, the main source of drinking water for Newburgh. City Manager Michael Caravino imposed a state of emergency May 2nd, which was lifted the following day as the city switched to a different water source, Brown's Pond. Mayor Judy Kennedy, speaking May 3rd, assured the public Brown's Pond has no PFOS contamination.
The water that you now find in the faucet is now perfectly safe to drink. It has no PFOS in it as of now.
Investigators are looking for the source of the contamination, which Kennedy said is not Washington Lake itself. Robin Greenwald, managing attorney of the Environmental and Consumer Protection Unit at Weitz & Luxembourg, says the firm fielded a few inquiries from Newburgh residents with news of the PFOS contamination.
So we had already been working on a PFOA water contamination in Hoosick Falls, New York. We're looking at it in Vermont, New Hampshire. And then so we follow it on our own. And then we, when this hit the news, we got a few inquiries from people because they found out that we had been working on PFOA issues.
Private wells in North Bennington, Vermont, among others, have been grappling with PFOA contamination in recent months. Greenwald says her firm could hold a community meeting in Newburgh, and she explains the purpose of such a meeting.
It's a twofold purpose. One is the people come meet us, and we learn so much from the community, more than they ever appreciate, because they all think that they're here there to learn from us, but we learn so much from them. And we'll have a meeting, and we'll see who comes and see what kind of interest there is. Look, communities are different. Some communities don't want to deal with the adversarial process of litigation, and some do.
Greenwald says if the firm does hold a community meeting, it likely would be in a few weeks. At this stage, the law firm is trying to gauge the scale of the PFOS contamination.
The information is much spottier in Newburgh than it was in Hoosick Falls.
She is inviting residents to come forward with information on how they may have been affected by the contaminated water. Neither Kennedy nor Caravino responded to requests for comment concerning Weitz & Luxembourgh. Meanwhile, back on May 3rd, Kennedy declared that PFOS levels were still below an Environmental Protection Agency threshold, levels that had been in the lake for a few years.
At no time has the level of PFOS been over the EPA guidelines, which has been 200 parts per trillion. Our measurement has been at 140 parts per trillion.
The State Department of Health and Department of Environmental Conservation issued a May 9th letter to Newburgh's mayor and city council members with results of drinking water samples taken in March. In addition, the letter shows results of non-drinking water samples, where in most cases, the PFOS levels are much higher than in drinking water samples. The highest PFOS level, 5,900 parts per trillion, was from a Stewart Air National Guard Base retention pond sample during a high-flow event. A DEC spokesman says one focus of the investigation into the source of contamination is on this retention pond and surrounding areas to see if stormwater runoff is a factor. PFOS is a chemical used in several products, including firefighting foam, and the spokesman says the investigation is eyeing whether such foam was used near any of the water sources at this time. DEC and DOH are assisting the city with investigating alternative drinking water and treatment options and will continue testing both drinking and non-drinking water sources.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. As for program number 1620. Or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.